powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Bump, to begin the show, actually, I take that back, not to begin the show, to begin hour two of the show, we talked about Bill Barnwell of ESPN saying the Seahawks at number 16 should actually trade back. They shouldn't take anyone. They should trade back. They used to do it all the time, and, you know, they get more bites at the apple when they do that, and that's what he thinks they should do from pick number 16 this year, especially because they do not have a second-round pick. We talked about, you know, kind of the benefits of that and, you know, at what point we wouldn't trade back, with both you and I saying we really liked that in the last 2 years with two top 10 picks, they stayed put and they ended up drafting players there. Then we started, just barely started, in like the final 30 seconds, getting into a conversation about whether more bites at the apple matter when not every draft pick, not every round is created equally. So that's the conversation we're getting back to here, because a listener texted this into the Mac and Jack's text line when we said that the draft was like a raffle. They said the draft isn't a raffle. All raffle tickets are not created equal when it comes to the draft. The number one overall pick is not the same as the last pick in the draft. I thought that was a great jumping off point for a conversation in general about what you gain from trading back, what you give up. So let's get to it. This is a broader, a bigger conversation about the draft and where you find value. First, what does that response make you think of, considering that you were using the analogy of like, look, you want more tickets?
Yeah. In my brain, I still see it as a raffle. Just that's the number fair. One pick, like that raffle ticket is worth 10. You know, like it's let me change it. It's just a gamble is all it is. It is a gamble. Now, you got to be bad to have the first shot. You got to be bad to get your name in a hat for that first shot. But it's such a flawed process that it's never going to be perfect. And every now and then you can walk away from the draft and say, man, my team got it right. Or this team got it right. Because most of the time your first pick probably isn't going to pan out the way that you wanted to. Your second pick probably going to pan out. You're looking to hit one or two out of your, if you get like what, six or seven picks, some guys, what John flipped it to like 10, 11, 1 year. You're hoping one or two of those things hit and the rest are just a supporting cast. When you draft high, you're hoping, okay, I hope we get to that second contract with that player. When you don't draft high, you're hoping to get like 3 years out of that guy, because that's the typical lifespan of a player in the NFL. So it is, I'm not disagreeing with this texter, the way that they're describing it. I can agree with that. And I can understand that, or hope they understand, or everyone understands that it's a gamble. So just because you got that high pick don't mean that it's going to work out. There's no guarantee that Caleb Williams is going to have the type of career that he wants or that people are projecting. And there are a lot of things that go into this. What offense are you running? Who are your coaches? What does the support look like as far as personnel? How quickly do you pick up an offense? Is this a right fit for you, that environment, that community? There are so many things that go into it that makes it just such an inconsistent and flawed process that will never be perfected. So, yes, it's I'm with the texter, and those are my thoughts on the gamble.
I completely agree that it's a gamble, and I also think that this conversation is nuanced overall. So you are more likely to find a starter, a good player, a player with a lot of talent and potential, particularly in round one, particularly in the first half of round one. That's just the truth. I remember when we would talk about, you know, finding a quarterback in later rounds, everyone always, oh, well, of course you got Tom Brady in the sixth round. Of course you got Russell Wilson in the third. Of course you got Dak in the fourth. And it's like, yes, there are Brock Purdy being the final overall pick. There are examples that you can find of franchise quarterbacks or starting quarterbacks or really good players going in later rounds. If I said, name me every first round quarterback, you'd be stumped, because all of a sudden you'd have a billion and five choices to pick from. You know what I mean? All of a sudden you're looking at, well, oh yeah, Peyton Manning, he was pretty good. That guy actually worked out really well. Like, those guys often go in the first round for a reason. And sometimes they slip through the cracks. And sometimes they go later. But you're right in that overall, a first round pick is more valuable. It's why those picks are more valuable. But we're not talking about the Seahawks trading back and picking up seven seventh rounders. we are talking about adding a day two guy because maybe you don't find a ton of value towards the mid to late first round. There are great players who have been drafted in the second round. The difference between trading back for the Seahawks, it might be 20 spots. You may find a guy in the second round that is just as likely to be a starter as a guy you would have taken at 16, 17, 18, 19.
Most success stories come from the later rounds anyway. You look at
there are
the majority
second
of
round
guys
picks.
Who last longer in this league, the bulk of them come from the later rounds. So that's why I think it's beneficial sometimes to move back, especially when you're at number 16. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want them to get out the first round. I mean, please don't move out of this first round. Get yourself a first-round pick and fill the void in the second round. Now you have picks in every single round. And who knows what they do after that. But all you want are just more chances to try to get this thing right, more opportunities to lean on your evaluation of the ball players through your scouting department and everyone else. More opportunities to make your team better on paper, because that's all it is. You're better on paper than you were before the draft. Now, paper's got to turn into reality. These guys got to pan out, develop, execute, grow mentally, physically, all that good stuff. There's a process that goes down when it comes to making these guys good football players or helping support them to become good football players. But the more chances you have at it, the better your odds are going to be.
Right.
You could have 10 picks and all of them flop. That's just part of the game sometimes. You can have three picks and one of them make it. I remember, what was that, 2021? They had three picks. I don't think any of them made it, really. Still got D still there. Stone Forsythe.
I don't even know where Stone is.
And,
is Stone still here?
Who's the other one? Was it three or two?
Trey Brown. D.S. Gridge.
So Trey,
Stone Forsythe.
Trey worked out. One out of three.
Not in that order. Yeah.
Yeah, one out of three. So you're good. Yeah, man. It's, again, it's a flawed process. And there are some guys, like Merle said, that are going to get some coaches fired. And typically those guys are the quarterbacks. So that's why when you have something solid, even if it's a Geno Smith and he's not an all-pro type of dude, you don't just rush to replace him. You take your time with Geno because I think he can buy you time so you can find a quarterback that works.
Yeah, and I think that the pushback that some people might have against not drafting at 16 is kind of like the defense that John Schneider and Pete used to mount in years past when they were asked about what the San Francisco 49ers were able to do. Their take was always, well, when you're fourth in the NFC West for 4 years, you get to rack up a number two pick with Nick Bosa. You know what I mean? Like, well, we haven't had the picks they have, which is why, in particular, when they had pick number five, you and I were like, you can't trade back.
Yep.
You don't get to use that argument anymore. You don't get to use that defense anymore. You no longer get a point to, well, they have picks that we haven't, when you pass on that pick. 16's tricky. 16 is that kind of part of the draft where you may get the... not second. You'll get if Troy Fautanu is available, you can have the third best tackle in a really good tackle class for an offensive line that needs help. But you have two starting tackles. Maybe you don't want to move them to guard. Maybe you think you can find interior guys later. Like, there's all kinds of nuance and like in important context unique to 2024 that falls into this class.
Happy Masters Week. Number 16 pick in the draft is like going, trying to get on the green on two. On a par five, two shots, trying to get on in two, man, because if you get on in two, some things could happen. But you can get on in two and still three-jack that thing and still end up with a par when you know dang well you should have birdied that thing. All right, all my golfers out there, you feel me?
Yeah.
So what do you do? Do you pull out the 3-wood and you go for it, or do you just pull out a nice little 7-iron layup and get on in regulation? That's the dilemma they have right here. It's like, all right, man, 16. Is there a guy out there that we really like that we can develop? And I hope that guy's out there. I hope. If they trade back, I get it. But if they pick at number 16, that tells me that they got their guy. This is the guy that we wanted. I would love to hear the little draft noise, boom, and have the Seahawks walk up to the podium, and boom, you get your guy. Instead of saying, all right, they're trading out of the spot, and somebody else has moved up. That just lets me know that they have found their guy. At number 5, there's no way you're trading out of that thing.
No.
Unless... it's a heavy quarterback type of draft. You're only moving back to like 8 or 9 or something like that, and you can get a guy. So, that gray area, man. I hate gray, but this is exactly where they are in the draft.
I'm going to play devil's advocate just for the sake of this argument. Now, I actually think they should stay put at 16 and address the trenches, whether it's Byron Murphy, whether it's Troy Fautanu, whoever it is. Like, that would be, if I were John Schneider, what I would do. I'm not. Who knows what he's going to do? He does like to trade back. I'm going to make a devil's advocate argument for trading back and why those first rounders don't always work out from the 360. Just play it safe. Make sure you get a guy who's going to be on your roster for 4 years, hopefully more.
make sure.
When was the last time the Seahawks gave a second contract to a first rounder that they chose?
It wasn't Jordan Brooks.
Does Rashad Penny count?
I'm not, they gave him a 1 year. Yeah, gave him a 1 year proven.
But they didn't.
Deal.
They also declined his 5th year option.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Think. When was the last time the Seahawks got Jermaine Ifedi? Wasn't it? L.J. Collier? Wasn't it? Rashad Penny had what a prove it year. Bruce Irvin, he went somewhere else before coming back, right?
He went to the Raiders.
Went to the Raiders and then came back. The Seahawks. Earl Thomas.
I think it was
probably Earl.
Earl Thomas. Is Earl Thomas my final answer to this? It might be. Think of how long ago that was. Meanwhile, two of the most successful players they've had in the last 13 years who saw more renewals, more money contract-wise than anyone else, a second rounder in Bobby Wagner and a third rounder in Russell Wilson. The last big contract they gave, second rounder DK Metcalf. So again, I am not saying by any means that trading back guarantees you get someone who works. I'm also saying that sometimes in the first round, you get someone who doesn't. And if you're John Schneider, you look at those picks and you kind of lament not adding on one or two more swings.
Here's the thing with all that, right? Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Forget the past. Forget what has happened. You got to live in that moment. You got to be in that draft room on that day in 2024 and not thinking about all the other stuff that happens. And you're looking at your team in that moment. No team is exactly the same in any sport after a year. Guys leave, they move on, new coaches come in. Things change. You can look at history and say, well, all right, we haven't been successful here, but you've never had a draft like you've had this year, just like you never had a team like you had this year. You never had the staff that you have this year. That's the battle of draft day. Is not leaning on trends and going off of what you know in that moment, what data you collected and what you believe in. For us, we're going to look back and say, man, they ain't extending anybody since Earl Thomas. That means they don't do well with their first round picks. No, it could mean that Jordan Brooks is wanting to go play in Miami. Mm-hmm. He's in Miami, right? He's in Miami? Yeah, mm-hmm. Want to go play in Miami. There's the player side of this whole thing, too, to where maybe their relationship wasn't great with the Seahawks. Maybe they want to go try something else out. So we should look at the history and try to figure out what's been going on, but it's the player side of this whole thing that's missed. Just like when we talk about the Mariners and them getting free agents. You gotta want to come here, too. You can't just say, look, we want you. Here's a check. Come get it. There has to be a mutual agreement there. So for some reason, that agreement has not been solid when it comes to these first-round picks. But Something tells me last year's two first-round picks are going to get to a second contract with the Seahawks.
Devin
Witherspoon and JSN.
And not for no reason. They were top 10 picks. So, again, that's when you look at 16. And 16 is still the highest pick they've had. I forget what when they got traded for Frank Clark, that pick was higher than they typically had. I still think it was only like 20 or something. And then I think they still traded back from that. I don't fully remember. But, yeah, you do get into tricky territory. But I agree on those two players reaching second contracts. I feel good about that. We're wrapping this up, but it's just a fascinating conversation about where you find value in the draft, when it's worth trading back, what you think the Seahawks should do there. I love this conversation. We are wrapping it up now, though. We're going to stick with football. Let's get to four down territory.
This is four down territory. Going inside the game. With former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, what are some of the things the Seahawks and other teams want to accomplish when potential draft picks come on their visits?
Now, you go on your visit and you're trying to get to know this player on a different level. You've watched all their snaps. You've watched their big games. You've watched them ball out. You've watched them fail. Now it's about, all right, does he fit into our culture and what we want to do? And actually, how smart is this young man as well when it comes to football? Let's get him on the board. Let's talk some football. Let's send him down to the training room, get to know our trainers, the physicals and all that, see how these injuries are. You're just observing. I mean, you're doing a lot of talking as well, but when you aren't Mike McDonald talking, when you're not talking to the head coach, you're not talking to the DC, the OC and all that, they're observing and they're collecting data on you. They're asking the front desk lady, how did this young man greet you when he came in? Did he give you a good feel? They're checking in with the trainers after you've spoken to them just to see what your vibe is like, man, because there have been a lot of good ball players to come through the NFL and just weren't able to connect with their teammates, their coaches, and people in the facility. All the football stuff is done as far as who they are in the physical. It's all about the mental and the fit. This is another date. You're bringing them in on a second date. You're trying to see if the first day was legit or what was it? Were they just masking a whole bunch of red flags? You're digging deep. So when you have guys like Bo Nix come in here, that's what they're trying to do. I mentioned the first hour of the show or second hour of the show, how, I was present for some of these visits, and there was one particular guy who came in and just rubbed everybody the wrong way. I'm talking about from rookies to veterans to trainers. It was just all bad. Ended up having a good career, but just wasn't the right fit for the Seahawks. So that's what they're doing, man. They're trying to fill out and see if this is the right person for the job.
Upon learning who this person was, I would say ended up having a good career, though not the career that would justify that attitude.
Yeah.
And that kind of entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you better have become first ballot Hall of Famer with that kind of attitude. And he did not.
He did not.
I like you mentioning the front desk thing, because that is such an important thing of, like, how does this person treat people who they never think we would talk to?
Yep.
If we talk to a cafeteria worker, if we talk to, like a random assistant on the coaching staff or whatever, like, how do you treat people when you don't think people are watching and when those people don't have power over you?
Exactly.
And that's so telling of anybody, even not players. Like, there used to be someone at the front desk of a local team who's not there anymore, who I loved, who many people I know loved, but this person would remember reporters and people behind the scenes, not necessarily players, who were not especially nice. And so you don't even have to be a player to leave a bad impression, and you need to be careful about how you treat people. Second down. Aaron Donald has officially passed the crown of best defensive player to a fellow defensive lineman. You don't agree with the name he threw out, but who else should be considered?
I got no problem with it. You know, and it's TJ Watt. I mean, this dude is a baller. 6-time Pro Bowler, 4-time All-Pro Defensive Player of the Year. 2020, he had 15 sacks. 21, he had 22.5. And 23, he had 19 sacks. But there are other guys you need to consider. I'm going to start with Chris Jones. He's had 35 sacks over the last three seasons. Michael Parsons has had 40 sacks over the last three seasons. That is fourth. Nick Bosa has had 45 sacks over the last three seasons. That is third. But the guy that I want to highlight is Myles Garrett. I mean, it's not easy to forget him, but kind of have to be reminded because he's over there with Cleveland. They did have a good year this year. There are a couple things that you can rely on with Cleveland. Their defense is going to be on point, and they will be able to run the football. Over the past three seasons, Myles Garrett has had 46 sacks. That is second in the league behind TJ Watt. Mm-hmm. So if Aaron Donald mentions his name, you're going to listen. You got to respect it. But I'm saying, man, Myles Garrett, I think, is in the conversation as well. It's up for grabs now, because I think every year for the past 10 years, we've all leaned on Aaron Donald and said he's the best in the game. Might not get Defensive Player of the Year every single year, but you know, when it comes down to it, he will be double team and triple team on almost every snap, and he was so versatile. He can play interior lineman, defensive lineman, also move to the outside. I look at a guy like Myles Garrett, though. He can do a little bit of everything. I think it's TJ and it's Myles Garrett at this point, and you throw a little bit of Michael Parsons in there. We'll see how he does next year with these Dallas Cowboys. Not mad at Aaron Donald, but I'm going to highlight Myles Garrett.
Third down. What's a position that has depth on the Seahawks roster, but you can still see them using a draft pick on?
Now, not an early draft pick, I don't think, but I also think that the way that Mike McDonald runs his defense, they're going to be looking at safeties. You still picked up a couple guys with Kavion you picked up, and Keyshawn, I believe his name is, you picked up as well. You're going to try them out. You signed into one-year deals. You're going to test them out and see what's going on. You still got Kobe Bryant, who I like. People be on my head. I guess that's my new Descris. Don't matter. That's my dude, Kobe. But there's some good safeties in this draft, and I don't think they go early. I think they go like in the fourth, fifth round if the Seahawks were to take a shot at one of these guys. One of them, yes, I'm biased, but he is a baller. Ask around about him. Jaden Hicks out of WSU. He's 6'2", ran a 4.59. He has a lot of range. He did play corner to start his career, moved over to safety. He's a freelancer, man. He will make plays on the football. Another kid I like out of the University of Miami, man, is Cameron Kinchis, 6'5". 5'11", ran a 4.65. This dude has a lot of range as well. Whoever they pick up at that safety spot is going to have to be a versatile type of guy. because I've watched McDonald's defenses, and he has several types of safeties. You got the long rangey guy. You got the tweener guy. You have the thick dude that you put in the box and get after it in the run. He likes safety play. He likes versatile safeties. Go ahead and take a peek at one.
Fourth down. Who can help this defense in 2024?
All right, man. So it's not going to be Dotson. He's going to help. It's not going to be Jerome Baker, but he's going to help too. It's weird. We're going to talk Dave Wyman's favorite position. We're talking kickers, man, and specifically the punter. All right, Michael Dixon. I don't even know if he likes to be called Mike. My bad, Michael.
Yeah, you got to be really cognizant of that because you don't like to be called
some
Mike.
Some guys don't like it. I mean, my grandma calls me Mike and random people at times. But I'm looking at him because what do you need to do to help a defense? You got to make the field long for the offense. And I want to go back to the glory days when Michael Dixon was hitting 70-yard bombs. It seemed like every other punt. Granted, that's not true. That's not reality. But there were times where he got a hold of one where I remember being at Lumen Field. They're backed up on the 10-yard line. His heels are in the end zone, and he bombs one and shifts field position. You got to help your defense out in a lot of ways. How do you do that? You help them out on offense. You put together long drives. You put up points. And then special team-wise, you got to be able to tackle. All right, let's emphasize that. Got to be able to tackle. But your punter can help you, man. So I'm going back. Michael Dixon's going to tap back in to what he was his rookie and sophomore year. He hasn't been bad. Let's not get it twisted. My man's still one of the best punters in the game. Mm-hmm. But you need some bombs, man. Help this defense out with special teams.
Heading back to the draft conversation just for 2 minutes here while we kind of round this out. A listener did point out something I thought was interesting. From the 425, the Seahawks' top 20 picks since 2010 have been Smith and Jigba, Witherspoon, Charles Cross, Bruce Irvin, Earl Thomas, and Russell Okung. That's actually not a bad run. All other picks were 25 or later. Now, yes, there is certainly a difference in where you're getting your draft picks, but 16 is exactly what makes it interesting because Spoon, Cross, and Russell Okung were top 10. And then Irvin was, I think, 15, Earl Thomas, 14. So we're talking about pick number 16, which is right at that edge of there is talent there, period, that you can find that will make you a better team. There is a starter, a day one starter you can find there. I also wonder where draft grades start to fall into the second round for John Schneider and his staff once you get to that point.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the closest pick they've had to 16. They ain't had one in a minute. 15, Bruce Irvin.
Yeah.
That's it. That's where it gets shady. Starts to get, not shady, but get gray. Starts to blend a little bit.
Well, and there are some character questions for Bruce who might have gone a little bit sooner if not for that. And the Seahawks that year had pick number 11. Maybe they go get someone else, but they were able to trade back and still get a really good player that had some red flags.
Earl Thomas was picked 14, so.
Yeah.
You know.
So, again, it's like it's right there, but that's also why it's a fascinating conversation because – Bump, for the record, you said, I think they should draft. Like, if it were me, I would draft.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see the case that Barnwell is making at pick number 16 for a team that does not have a second rounder to make a move, especially in a class where pick number 16 just became more valuable for teams that are looking to get a wide receiver, especially. All right, you're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. I love this conversation, but we're moving on to the Mariners. It's not too early to say they have a problem. John Morosi has a concern. That's coming up next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
How are you? You listening, feeling about the start to the Mariners season? You can join this conversation on the Mac and Jack's text line, 866-979-3776. Again, 866-979-3776. Bump, you and I opened the show by talking about whether or not it was too early to start worrying about the Mariners, and we both said, you know what? I'm not panicking by any means, nor am I writing this team off in any way. Like, they should be so much better on paper than they have been. But no, I don't think it's too early to say the Mariners have a problem. I think that if you look at this team and you just say, I don't see anything wrong, then I don't know what to tell you. I'm not saying it sticks around. I'm not saying it's permanent. I'm not saying it's anything to pull your hair out about and panic about. But I am saying that it is okay to look at what you've seen from the Mariners through 10 games and go, I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
It's okay. It's all right. You gotta go off of what you see. It doesn't mean that that's permanent. Just because this is who they've been for 10 games doesn't mean that it's permanent. What it does mean is that some of the things you're worried about or we were worried about are true.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed up. They showed up early. It's all about perspective. Are you capable of digesting what you're seeing and remaining patient? Or is 10 games enough for you to be like, I told you that the defense was going to be horrible. They're not going to hit for power. This lineup doesn't have enough. Or you find the little mini battles. And that's where I'm at so far with this season. It's the mini battles.
Yeah.
All right, Polanco's gone yard. Oh, Urias has gone yard. Dom leads the team in home runs with two. You've been through the rotation twice so far. Hasn't looked good. But there have been spots. There have been spots where Castillo looks good, where Kirby's on point, where Gilbert is on point. Like, you've seen it. And because there's 162 of them things, it's hard to pigeonhole this team and say this is who they are. This is who we thought they had the potential to be with the shortcomings. But as teams get through the season, you see more pitches at when you're in the box. You are just getting used to the tempo of things. There's room to change. But I think because it's almost like a lot of people can say, I told you so.
Yeah.
They lean into the I told you so.
I agree. Let's lean into what someone else is saying. I didn't get to play this sound earlier. This is from John Morosi with Wyman and Bob talking about how he feels so far about the start to the season. He says, yes, it is early. You don't have a feel for the team yet, but he's noticing something a little concerning.
They're a team that is still heavily dependent on their pitching, and they're a team that they need their situational hitting to get a lot better than it's been. And this is where you would have thought, based on where they're at in their arc, and again, I stress that it's a week, but they are a group that you would like to say will find ways to avoid having a stretch where they are at this stage, let's say, of the standings at this moment in time, where the offense has been this inconsistent. You would have liked to have said, okay, yeah, one game offensively going south, okay, I get it. Two games in a row, that you're starting to get a little bit concerned. It's now gone on for, I think, a bit too long relative to the veteran nature of this club.
You agree with John that they should not be, that they shouldn't be this stagnant on offense, that it is fair to have expected a little bit more.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair because we're just looking at data and we're saying data tells us this is the team you're going to see with these Mariners. You're going to see a team that relies on its pitching, a team that's not built to win scores 8-9 consistently. They're a team who's going to win 5-3, 5-4, 4-3. 1-0. Those are all their wins. That's the type of team that this team is. 12-4 is something that's not going to happen often. But once you get down, this team isn't built to come back from behind. You get down 5 or 6 runs, that's tough, especially in the beginning of the season where, Julio's not hitting the ball the way that he wants to right now. Ty France is the only one really squaring the ball up when it comes to the hard hit rate. You're just not built. You're not there yet. So this team is built to weather the storms of close games because of their pitching and their defense, and those are the two things that I wouldn't say have failed them the most, but have compromised this whole situation. And then, again, the strikeout rate, man, 28%, bottom two in the league. You don't want to see that. It's just a slow start, something that you wanted to avoid and you thought that they were going to be able to avoid. But, again, they saw some good pitchers to start the season. You said Trevor Story. Saw him, now he's banged up. We got Bieber as well. Saw him, now he's banged up. So we'll see how the rest of the season goes. But, again, I choose to look at the little victories. And seeing Polanco feel like he's starting to come around is a little victory to me. What needs to be cleaned up and something that is fundamental baseball is just defensively, man. Mm-hmm. Just make the dang play. And there's some routine plays that these guys are missing. There are some tough ones that they're missing, too. But that's what the good ball clubs do. They make those tough plays. Like seeing one screaming at JP and him just totally missed it is something so foreign to me. I'm not used to seeing that. And seeing Ty France mess up a transfer trying to throw the ball to home is something I'm not used to seeing. So because I'm not used to seeing it, that allows me to kind of pump the brakes a little bit, not overreact.
From the 206, they've shown excellence in every aspect, just not at the same time. Get in a benches clearing brawl and let's roll. from the 253, this is what I expected from my Mariners. It's why I wanted the Rangers to win the World Series last year. To prove that to win, you need to spend some money. It's exactly who we will be all season. Mediocre. From Ralph and Crossroads in the 425, they're just off to their usual slow start. From the 360, the Mariners' refusal to sign a big-time bat is going to come back and get them. From Matt in the desert, the 206 says they find them extremely frustrating, and JD in the 509 says, I'm annoyed because they always start slow. Both Bump and I agreed that this was a year in which you really wanted to start fast. And while you can always make up ground in baseball, this division would be tough, and you had injuries with the Rangers in Houston that are not going to last.
Yeah, man, and now you got the dang Angels in front of you right now. That's more just a pride thing, you know. That's more of a pride thing. What, a game behind the Angels, but you know, you missed out on an opportunity. But here's the thing: there are going to be more opportunities, and a new one starts today, right? Take on Toronto today.
Yep.
New one starts today. It's our job to dwell on things that have happened, but I'm hoping that they put something together today so we can kind of see their true potential, man. When you're minus 21 in run differential, I mean, the only one in the positives right now in the West are the Texas Rangers, and they're 6-3 doing what they're supposed to do. So everyone is struggling in this division when it comes to producing runs and run differential. They're doing it in different ways. I haven't watched all the Angels or Houston or the Athletics, obviously. I spend more time on the Mariners. Everyone's got their issues. I am going to take credit for jinxing the back-to-back no-no that was possible for the Astros the other day. As soon as I turned it
on, fair.
Gave up a hit, that was me.
Good job.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You know what? Thank you. I think that to kind of branch off of what you were saying, another opportunity here against Toronto, and to balance out my own frustration, I do still have a ton of optimism. I agree with Ryan Divish, as you, who joined us earlier and said, on paper, the offense should be better. Now, you aren't always, in fact, you are rarely the team on the field that you are on paper when you start the season. You have injuries, you have things that don't go away your way, you have guys that break out and have amazing seasons that you weren't expecting it from. So you're still waiting to see the team that you expected to see, and I'm sure that's how Jerry Dipoto feels and Justin Holland are looking at this team. The only thing I hope is this, that if they do not start to see that team and we start inching towards the All-Star break, now we are months away, but that we collectively, Royal, we recognize that maybe you don't have the perfect recipe and they add to it. We are way too far away from that to start talking about it. But like, I hope that we, Royal, we are keeping our minds open to the idea that like, you may not have the perfect team and the answer and the perfect formula, and there should be some flexibility with trying to find a way to make this team as good as possible. So we'll see what that looks like moving forward. That's the too long out conversation to have. But you're right, Bump. They have another chance here against Toronto. Let's see if they can get it done. Blue Jays home opener, by the way. 10 games on the road. I don't envy them. All right, you guys, get your questions into What I Need to Know, 866-979-3776. It's coming your way next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
It's What I Need to Know. Here's how it works. You send in the question that you have top of mind to the Mac and Jack's text line. Any question. It doesn't have to be about sports. It could be advice. It could be something funny. It could be sports. 866-979-3776. We got this one. What I Need to Know. Who was the fastest player you ever played with or against, Bump?
With Joshua Anderson, he won like the 400 meter hurdles and for the Pac-10 back then, 3 or 4 years in a row. He's now the sprint coach at UW. And against probably DeSean Jackson. It didn't even look like he was trying hard. He was just floating.
When's the first player that you thought, because you were one of the top recruits in the nation, best kid from your hometown, best kid in your high school. When was your, oh, I'm not the best moment?
I would say,
because mine came early. And like, I'm talking first or second grade.
mine would say my first start. My first start was against Oregon. I did take a punt to the house, but you just felt the difference of speed on the field. Like, all right, I'm not just going to turn this screen into a 60-yard gain like I used to.
What I Need to Know, what word or name triggers a response from you every time? For instance, every time someone says Jones, I go, who? So they said, Bump just said Chris Jones. And in my head, I said, who? Chris Jones.
every time someone says what, I think, what? Yeah.
That's related. Another musical reason. I can't think of one now. Those are two really good ones. Probably Jones is one of them for me. Or every time someone says, who? The reverse. You just Mike Jones.
Yep.
Let's see. What I Need to Know. This is more of a hypothetical. If you were able to trade DK and your first rounder for a guaranteed pick of Marvin Harrison Jr. and a third rounder, would you do it? I want to be clear. I want DK to retire a Seahawk, but it's a fun convo.
Yeah, I'd do it. I'd do that.
Yeah, Marvin Harrison Jr.
Marvin Harrison and a third round pick?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd do that.
The way I feel about it, and this is why I would be a cold-blooded, heartless GM, is the way I feel about, like, yeah, I got that sweater and I liked it at the time, but this is something new and cool and fast and exciting.
Yeah.
Marvin Harrison Jr., what if he's the best?
Yeah.
And every expert we talk to is like, Marvin Harrison Jr. will be amazing.
He's legit. Like, and I'm with you.
He will be
so
good.
I want DK here forever.
Yeah. I think DK is one of the best picks they've made in the last several years.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I would put him in the last 10, going back to 2014. Yeah. In the last 10 years, one of the best draft picks they've made.
Yeah.
And I still would be curious about that. What I need to know, when was the last time you got legit locked out of your house or car, and what did you end up doing?
Legit. One of these nights, me and my wife got separated at an event. She went home early or something like that, and then I Bob, Ubered
home. You gotta
home.
Phrase those things better.
What'd I say?
You said you and your wife got separated.
At an event.
Oh,
at an event.
She's no longer with us.
No.
We got separated.
He always says that. So, Pluto Ford, who's no longer with us, like, Bump, what? God.
Oh, man.
Everything sounds so intense.
We left an event at different times.
There
okay,
you go.
Okay,
she
okay,
drove.
Okay.
I Ubered back. I thought she went home. She went to her parents' house. I broke into my own house, and I told my daughter, I go, that's why you can't leave your window open, because I just jumped in this thing. So, yeah.
The last time I remember, now it's most certainly happened since, the last time I remember it was when I pulled up to a Starbucks, got out of my car, shut the door, run inside, get my coffee, start walking out, fishing around for my keys, and then you stop, you look in, and I see
right
my
there.
Keys in
yeah.
there.
Panic.
Devastating. What I need to know, what do you make of the A's move to Sacramento?
I don't. For athletic fans, now you have to drive to Sactown. Stacy's
my home away from home.
Home away from home.
Spring
Sacramento.
Spring break paradise.
Stacy's freshman year of college, spring break, ill-advised spring break destination.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. The games will seem a bit more packed, though. At least I hope. If they can at least get half of that 14,000 seat ballpark field, they got some real issues. I don't know. I just feel bad for the fans, man.
Yeah. What I need to know, what would Tiger shoot on the course bump shot 66? First of all, I would like to issue that. It was a 76.
76.
Let's not give Bump more credit than is due.
I shot a 76. Tiger's probably shooting like a 60 at that thing, man. It's
crazy.
It's a shorter course in length, but it's real tight.
Stacy, why are you so awesome? I'm just kidding. They also in this said, Bump, why are you so awesome? Curtis, why are you so awesome? Someone said they've never gotten locked out. Well, good for you.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Good I guess luck. You're perfect.
Got the Cal Ripken of never getting locked out.
I'm so sorry. It's very impressive. Someone said maybe we could trade the Kraken for the A's, and then between the two teams, we can come up with a team that might play above 500. Oh, no.
Hey.
You know what I'll say about the Kraken is, when they're on, like that playoff run, the single playoff run they had in that series against the Avs was really fun. Like, really fun.
You
like, I got like? Playoff hockey for the first
you sound
time.
Like 95.
No.
No.
You sound like 2000 and whatever.
How dare you? No. That would be a 95 moment if I was still making excuses for the Mariners or, man. If the Huskies had never gone to the national title game and I was like, but you know, we did win it one time, co-champs, that would be a 95 person. Let's see. Bump, not everyone has hops like an ex-pro athlete. I can't jump in windows.
You can jump and pull, though.
Yeah.
Jump, pull, you know, throw that knee up there. You good?
What I need to know, what's something you would eat if... when watching sports on TV, but would never eat at the ballpark or arena? Okay, so what's something you would eat if you're watching the game at home, but you'd never eat it at the ballpark?
Wings would be tough in a stadium environment.
Yeah, so messy. That's it. It's wings. You gotta have the napkins on deck.
Or like some. If I'm home, I'm probably eating healthier versus if I'm at. You know what I mean? When you go to a game, you're like, it's an event. Now I have a reason to drink or to eat poorly or to do whatever.
Salad at the ballpark.
Yeah. What I need to know, across all sports, this is a good question. This is tough. Across all sports, what's the best looking number on a jersey? This is tough.
Well, my favorite number is 5, so I'll just eliminate that, though.
Why? That's your answer.
No, because I'm going to say that because that's my number. But I'm going to try to, you know what I think? I think 11 looks really good. I like 11.
11's a really good one. I think it this is, I'm cheating. It always depends on body size.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we talked about Cam Newton earlier. Cam Newton, with how giant he was and dominant with a one, you were like, this just fits. Like, that, man, this guy looks unstoppable. I would say it has to be 18 double digit. So I agree. 11, 18, 14. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
20s can get complicated.
They can. 20s or 30s are the worst.
60s, no disrespect. someone's 206 says, yes, 11 is the choice. 206, another 206. MJ or Prince? Who's better and why?
MJ, bigger icon. Prince was more talented, though. Prince could play any
wow.
instrument.
Wow, okay, that is
he
true.
Could play
but that is
any
a,
instrument.
That is a take and a half,
he
and
is
I
more
say
talented.
That on sports
yeah.
radio.
Yeah.
Prince more talented than MJ?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have a better voice, though.
No. I mean, MJ was like a mythical creature. You
yeah.
know?
And dancing wise, too. But Prince yeah. was.
Prince was. I
how about this?
Anything.
Prince was the better musician.
Yeah.
Wow, that was
MJ better entertainer.
I didn't expect us to end the show with that kind of heat. That's crazy. All right, you guys, that will do it for us today. For Michael Bumpus, Curtis Rogers, Matt Nelson, I'm Stacey Rost. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming up next.